Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, everyone out there. Thank you so much to our Ivy Podcast listeners for tuning into today's episode. I will be your host for today's session, Angela Alberti. As I was saying before we press record, I am so excited to have the opportunity to sit down and speak with Jeanette Harvey today, founder and CEO of Harper & Gray. Jeanette, I have been following you. I know a lot of our listeners out there probably have seen you across some of the social media platforms as well. If you are somebody that's in the world of talent and really focused on DE&I and inclusion, this is the episode that you want to listen to because we are speaking to somebody that is certainly deemed as a thought leader within the space. So thank you for everyone that is going to be tuning into today's episode. Quick housekeeping item, if you could please give us a rating, pop into your app store, give us some stars, give us some feedback. We'd love to get that information from you. It helps us get in front of more listeners, and it's information that we definitely review and take to heart as we are building the Ivy Podcast channel. So without further ado, Jeanette, please give us a quick intro on yourself.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here. Introduction on myself. So I came to the States around 15 years ago and co-founded the North American business for the S3 Group, which is a specialist STEM recruiting company. So went on an incredible journey and learned a ton in what was actually a very entrepreneurial opportunity. So I grew that business from zero to just under 300 million. Wow. And as part of that, sort of navigated some of the challenges personally of being a woman in a senior leadership role and also a minority. Partially that experience really inspired me earlier this year to step away from that business. It was a wonderful journey, but it was time to take that leap into entrepreneurship. And so I founded my own company, Harper & Gray, which is really a company that is looking much more organically at talent solutions. And the lens is really put in diversity, equity, and inclusion at the forefront of everything that we do. So that's me in a nutshell.
That is fantastic. And what an incredible journey that you've been on since founding or being one of the founding members of S3 and now transitioning into your own business endeavor. For me, this interview is an opportunity for a personal testimony. I think you hold a lot of the attributes that somebody that is also as a female, as a minority, can really look to garner and gain a lot of insight from you. So I'd love to start off with some questions in that regards. Talk to us a little bit about your experience as a female within the executive leadership space. And what advice would you give for women like myself and women that are listening into today's episode that are also taking that leap and perhaps coming across some challenges in doing so? As I mentioned, this is something personal for me as a co-founder of a new startup company. So I'd love to get your thought on that.
Yeah, so I think senior ranks of a leadership team as a woman can be challenging. We've made so much progress as a culturally and as a society, I think, around women in leadership. So it's great to see that the path for future generations is hopefully going to be easier. But I would certainly say I had the only syndrome. So being the only woman often around that boardroom table, it can certainly be challenging, particularly earlier on in your career, to really find your voice. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I would say, and something I wish I knew back then, is just because you're an only around that table, it doesn't mean there isn't a whole world and network of other people who have been in your shoes. So I certainly advocate the power of networking, finding mentors and kind of other role models, and ultimately confidence and kind of overcoming some of those things that I think from a gender perspective creep in, imposter syndrome, the perfectionism trap, all of those things. Mm-hmm. I navigated them, I experienced them, I overcame them, and a lot of that was just through experience, but certainly in the later part of my career, I definitely mm-hmm. sought out networks and mentorship, which now, having taken that leap into entrepreneurship, has paid dividends. You know, I really had a flying start with my new business, and I attribute that in part to the network that I built in the latter part of my career.
That's fantastic. That's some great advice. And it's something that I can be a testimony to, exactly of what I'm going through right now, being that only female in the boardroom. It comes with its challenges, but honing in on the power of your network and finding that mentor is certainly a powerful piece of advice that we can stick with. Now, how has this entrepreneurial experience been with Harper & Gray? It's a different shift in your career. And tell us a little bit more about the start, because I believe it launched a couple of months ago, if not at the earlier part of this year. How has that experience been like for you?
Yeah, so I think I'm literally at first 90 days. So
okay, ready. Congratulations.
Yeah, ready for that first evaluation point. I mean, it's been fantastic. And one of the things that a lot of people reach out to me on for advice is, how did you get the courage to make the leap? And that's really a big part of it. I think the first thing is just putting one foot in front of the other and taking that difficult leap into the unknown. And so I think of it as two parts. Number one, you need to have a really solid plan, but not too solid of a plan. You need to also have that agility and ability to moonwalk when mm-hmm. things change, right? So it is. It's definitely been a baptism of fire, and I'm very, very grateful that the business and the concept and the mission has resonated so strongly with the marketplace. I think that the vast majority of entrepreneurs overestimate what they can get done, and I'm no different to that. So it's been a lot of hard work to kind of keep pace, and I'm actually really excited that I'm going to be hiring people way ahead of schedule. So that's kind of a testament. But there's certainly been a few things that I've had to kind of embrace, such as done is better than perfect, right? So you're constantly in a situation where you're doing things for the very first time, and it's out of your comfort zone. And so really being able to kind of roll with the punches and know that the 1.0 version is not going to be as good as the 2.0 version that you put out, but it's important to get going. One of the key things for me as a new business owner, though, is integrity and doing what you say you're going to do. So the early clients that have come on board with my business, I think have definitely gotten the white glove treatment. And mm-hmm. I think that's such an important part and foundation of building a business that you want to be proud of. So right. Those would be my early observations from first 90 days, for sure.
Well, definitely big congratulations to you guys. And you said something that I think is a perfect transition into my next question, is that you guys have really been able to garner a lot of the marketplace out there, and the timing is perfect. And you talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and why it is a topic in every single boardroom across America and across the globe right now. Can you set a little bit of the landscape as to why you think it is, and I'm sure how this helped even inspire your decision for Harper & Gray to keep that at the core of your mission as the main why of what you guys do every single day?
Yeah. So this has been important for a really long time, but mm-hmm. obviously with the way that the world has been, particularly since the pandemic, is very much at the forefront. So I'd say there's real social and societal pressure now for organizations to take this very seriously, because we as individuals take this very seriously. Mm-hmm. And so the difference around the conversations that are happening in boardrooms and within organizations across the country is everybody knows that this is something that they should focus on. It's really the organizations that want to focus on this, those for the right reasons. You know, I think we is still kind of a tale of two halves, where we've got organizations that are trying to kind of really catch up and really wrap their arms around it, and they're just not there yet. They know they need to do something, but the sort of authentic commitment to it is perhaps somewhat lacking, and maybe even still from an education standpoint. And then mm-hmm. you've got organizations that are making tremendous strides around diversity, equity, and inclusion, because that it aligns with their values. Like, that's the organization that they want to be. And so I think that's the current landscape.
Yeah, and there's so many impacts. You talk about the social construct of what's happening right now, the generational impacts that millennials and Gen Zers are going to be bringing in evaluating companies. It almost equates to future survivability of a company's future trajectory, especially when we're talking about the talent and actually maintaining a diverse workforce. So besides the social and the benefits that a company could get from that retrospect, talk to us about what you've seen from an actual statistical standpoint in terms of the benefits that a company can have when they actually increase and really focus on the diverse workforce within their worker makeup.
Yeah, so there are so many statistics out there to mm-hmm. support that this is not just the right thing to do from a social perspective, but is the right thing for organizations to do from a competitive standpoint too. Mm-hmm. So diversity of thinking and what that does to an organization's bottom line. There's so much research out there. I mean, the stat that kind of comes to mind is organizations with significant gender diversity outperform their competitors by 25%. And then when you layer in ethnic diversity, that number, I believe, increases to 32-33%. So there's a lot of supporting data that says, and it also makes sense, right? Is when you've got people around the table that all look and think alike, you are never going to get that same level of creativity and competitive advantage as when you've got people from different walks of life, different backgrounds, different perspectives. It just kind of goes hand in hand. So I'd say that the kind of productivity piece is something that is very profound for organizations right now to kind of understand. This is there's a real commercial value to this. The other thing I would say is the lifeblood of most organizations is talent. And mm-hmm. so when you consider the decision-making factors now for talent going to join an organization, a recent stat that I saw on Glassdoor sort of said that the diversity and the makeup of an organization is a significant factor around whether someone plans to join or stay at an organization. I think 61% of people said it was a significant factor. Wow. And I think that's going to only really increase. So if companies want to have their pick of the best and richest talent, and there is certainly a talent war right now, then this is table stakes, right? It's table stakes for people considering joining an organization. And quite frankly, if they don't see their values reflected in the composition of your leadership team and organization at large, then it's highly unlikely that they are going to choose to build a career with you. So I think that's reason enough, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like we're experiencing what is a perfect storm for companies and strategies to align to this mantra. You have the talent war, mm-hmm. you have the social setting, and, you know, we even have more further statistical data just a couple of days ago. I'm not sure if you saw this, but the census 2020 was released, and there has never been a more diverse population of workers than there is now. All of these elements are lending to the importance behind this. But now it's time to really kind of like keep it real, right? So if a company truly holds value to this, what are those fundamental steps that they need to do, that they need to implement to actually take action and take, you know, measurable action behind creating and implementing a project plan to hold true through their diversity and inclusion strategy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting the way that you frame that diversity and inclusion. So mm-hmm. for a lot of companies, they almost find it easier on the diversity side, which is really about representation. Mm-hmm. Inclusion is a whole different ball game, and you actually really need to understand that at a different level to be able to kind of impact it. So if you take the diversity side, all the way from the beginning, right? Where are you going to source candidates from? Mm-hmm. And so organizations need to be willing and prepared to look beyond their traditional networks for candidates. And this really holds true, particularly for senior leadership roles, where you've got companies that rely on their own tight networks to find other senior leaders, or they rely on the exact same search firms and talent partners that they've always had, and whose network again looks a kind of a certain way. So I think it's very much understanding that if you want to see change, then you actually have to do something different. Talent partners, the schools that you kind of you source people from, all of those things, it needs to kind of be shaken up. And then really deciding how you evaluate talent. So there's so much inherent bias in our processes around how we evaluate talent that if you don't have a critical eye to remove some of those obstacles and really kind of look objectively to see, okay, if we're going to see a different talent pool, are we actually giving people a fair crack of the whip to succeed and to move through our interview process? That is kind of hand in hand. Understanding what the onboarding process is, I think it's very difficult to recover from a less than constructive onboarding process. And so how are you onboarding talent, and particularly diverse talent, into your organization where from word go they feel that sense of kind of belonging, and that they kind of have a voice and they feel welcome, and often not enough thought goes into that piece. Mm-hmm. And then really understanding from an inclusion standpoint, what it actually means, that if you're looking at, say, talent in your executive leadership team, and you're bringing in one woman on the board, which is often what happens, that might not get you the results that you're looking for, because that person still feels kind of marginalized, right? There's still not ideal circumstances to be able to benefit from that diversity of thought. So it's kind of really understanding what that needs to look like, and then providing an environment and this goes all the way from the values of an organization, is inclusion, is that baked into your organizational values? Does that run all the way down the chain within the company? Those things are so important. And I'd say kind of finally, a lot of companies have got really great top level initiatives around diversity, equity, and inclusion. But where it falls down is interaction with specific leaders. So you can go out and see any workplace survey that says the vast majority of people still leave their manager. They leave an organization because of the experience that they're having with their line manager. And so I think where we're really missing the mark, or where there's an opportunity, is to invest a lot more in developing inclusive leaders. So leadership is hard enough as it is. And now we're asking and expecting our leadership teams to manage increasingly diverse teams and to show up and be very inclusive. But the missing link is, how are we actually investing in our leaders to evolve, right? How are we empowering them to be that inclusive leader? And so I think there's a really great opportunity for organizations to start there, to embrace what the modern inclusive leader looks like, sounds like, and kind of shows up in their organization, and kind of help people to get there. And that alone will have a disproportionate impact on how the workforce feels.
Well, thank you for that. That was an incredible breakdown on DE&I, is particularly with the inclusion piece, because I don't feel like we hear enough about that. So for me, it was certainly a great eye-opening experience to hear that. Now let's talk about Harper and Gray. How is it that you guys exactly hone in on this process? I know that you guys have a multitude of offerings. When you have that new client, what is that approach that Harper and Gray customizes when it comes to the DE&I impact of a company?
Yeah. So one of the things that was really important for me was to meet organizations where they were. And so there's no judgment around, have you made enough progress in this area or not? It's just sort of, what are we trying to kind of solve for within the organization? So for me, it's very much a high touch process when I consult with a new client, and each of the service lines that we offer and provide can be utilized kind of independently, or they work really well together to provide a more holistic experience. But in short, the executive search business is really focused on not just finding you the best talent, but there's no excuse, there's no reason why we cannot provide you with a diverse slate of candidates every time. So that's not about giving you four women, it's about providing you with a slate of candidates that's reflective of the world that we actually live in, right? So that's everything. It's, you know, all genders, it's all ethnicities, it's about providing that diversity for clients. And then the strategic advisory really helps organizations to say, okay, we've got the talent through the door, but how do we ensure that our processes really support your D&I initiative? So it is it's looking at onboarding processes, it's looking at unconscious bias in the interview process. It's it leads directly into kind of the third service line, which is kind of the executive coaching, with a specific focus on developing inclusive leaders, right? So it is, how do we make sure that all of these other efforts, like, takes so much to bring this talent through the door, let's make sure that we're setting everybody up for success, including your leaders. So that's really how we would approach it.
It's that two-pronged approach. And so many times it the latter part of your strategic advisory and everything that you guys help therein, the onboarding, the unconscious bias when actually interviewing or even when parsing through that initial resume is so critical, but it's often the afterthought through that entire life cycle. So pretty interesting to hear. Now, as we're wrapping up today's session, I'd love for you to just give a shout out on how we can get a hold of you. How can our audience find more information about Jeanette and Harper and Gray?
Mm-hmm. Well, my platform of choice is LinkedIn. So I often try to share insights on LinkedIn. So you can follow me at Jeanette Harvey. And I'm always responsive when people reach out to me on LinkedIn. And if you're interested to hear more about Harper and Gray, then you can visit us at harperandgray.com. And very, very happy to continue the conversation and the dialogue with anyone that you know, finds this a topic that's really important to them, either as individuals or in driving progress within their organization.
Yep. And if there ever is a time, it is now. So Jeanette, thank you so much for joining us. If I could just add a little plug into that, you guys at a minimum have, if y'all have a chance to be on LinkedIn, just press the follow button on Jeanette because she shares some fantastic information when it comes to this topic and so many others that are pressing right now in the world of talent. So I am a personal testament to that. It's actually how we cross paths for today's session. So I want to thank you, Jeanette, so much for joining us on today's Ivy podcast. And thank you so much to our listeners as well. We really enjoyed sitting down with you today, Jeanette, and we hope that, you know, things continue on the successful track for Harper and Gray. But we will see you guys all on the next episode. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.